Welcome to Evolving Your Workplace After Hours, where my co-host Kevin Legg and I share our two cents on hot topics in the business world. Kevin is a veteran advisor to organizations specializing in employee development. And I'm your host, Carol Schultz, fractional chief of staff and creator of the Chief of Staff Scaffold System. Combined, we have 50 years experience in this world. Let's get into it. Well, hey there, ho there, everyone. So this is our first After Hours episode with my new co-host, Kevin Legg. I've known Kevin for about 2 years, differing from Rob, who I've known for over 30 years. So I think that Kevin's going to bring in a really interesting, fresh perspective. And why don't you just take a minute and tell everybody just a little tiny bit about you.
Thank you, Carol. Great to be aboard. And of course, we met when me and my team found your book, read it, tracked you down, and asked you for an interview. So what a lovely way to close the loop after after a couple of years. So that was powered by people. So I live in Singapore. I don't have a definitively Singaporean accent when you hear me. I'm from Southern Alberta. But I think that kind of marks a bit of my story, my way of thinking, which is that I've lived in a bunch of different international outposts for different lines of work, including what I do now. For most of my working life, I was with an organization called GLG, which a number of your listeners will know from different walks of life because they support the investment community and the consulting community in finding experts. So I know a bit about your audience. Some of them will have been experts advising through that platform, and some of them will have been clients finding experts and using them on that platform. But I helped build their frontier offices for just under two decades. And so I was the founder of the Singapore office and the Mumbai office and the Sydney office and some of the teams there. Now I run an organization called Sage, and we're entirely focused on how people teach and learn at work. And I think that's one of the things that's going to make our conversation fun, because I really like getting my hooks into what's an organization doing with people sort of a couple of weeks after they come aboard, and how are they picking out their best teachers? How are they picking out what they need to learn? And so hopefully I can bring some of that flavor to the podcast.
The color commentary, so to speak. Yeah. So I know Rob and I have talked about, and often this whole return to office situation. And, you know, my feelings typically, it depends. And I think it warrants more conversation because this is still going on. And most recently, I read an article called A Stealth Alternative to Layoffs. Mm-hmm. It looks like companies are cracking down on remote work to get employees to quit. So what do you have to say about that, Kevin?
There's a little bit of a tell. It's like, what other things might a company crack down on in order to get employees to quit? And I think that's by itself an indication of how the organizations maybe think about work from home. It's like you have a nice shiny thing and I can take it away. You know, would they take away titles? Would they take away, you know, compensation? Work from home doesn't have that same status yet as some of those other stalwarts. My immediate thought is that companies don't necessarily have a good, strong handle on what their workplace actually is and what our workplace is and what their workplace is.
Yeah.
And so when something like this comes along, they look at that and they go, oh, this is up for grabs because it's not the workplace. Mm-hmm. And you sort of have to pause for a minute. Is it not? You know, for your listeners, I'm trained in philosophy, so I can't sort of help but ask a what is a workplace kind of question. But as soon as you, as an organization, start saying, we will take this nice thing from you to our benefit, then you sort of have to ask, what is it really? Is it really just a perk? Is that what working from home really is? So I know that doesn't really spot on answer the question, but that's my very first read on it. And there's more that I can say there. But how do you see it from a talent perspective?
Yeah. You know, I think I've said this for so many years. You know, Google was the first company that really started adding big perks, and then everybody followed suit, you know, and I've always believed that, you know, yes, there's probably a couple of reasons that they did that. One was to attract really great talent. And the other was to keep people in the office as long as possible, right? Mm-hmm. Get all your meals here. You will do your laundry. We'll take care of your kids, you know, whatever that might be, right? And companies are starting to turn their backs on all those extra perks. And I think a company has to look at what works for them and what works for their current employees and their future employees, right? So I think it's perfectly fine to have in office, if you tell all your new people, this is what's to be expected of you. Mm-hmm. You're in the office 5 days a week or 4 days a week or whatever that might be, right? We're in the office every day, no working from home unless, you know, there's an emergency. But to take what people have gotten used to and say, yeah, we're pulling a bait and switch. That just is not effective. And part of the problem, of course, here is that, and they talked about it in this article, which was not any surprise to me, is the minute you have a return to office mandate, yeah, are you going to get some voluntary turnover? Yeah, sure. You may get a lot of voluntary turnover, but is it going to be the turnover of the people that you want to turn over? Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Your highest performer is going to say, screw this, I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, the best people can always find a job.
Yeah. What an interesting point. So for me, the concept of like, what is a workplace? As soon as people have to decide something like this. Let's agree. It's easy to decide people can work from home. You're not going to get people protesting because that's an option. If you might have had a problem, you know, 15 years ago, if you said people must work from home, they might say like, I don't have any space. You know, I can't work at my kitchen table. But that's not the same. Saying you must come back is not an option, widening dictation. It's the opposite. You have to work in one of these places. So it's harder to do one way than the other to say you can work from home. Oh, now you have to come back. A workplace is beyond anything else. It's a place where that specific work happens. Not any old work, but that exact value that exact group of people provides to that exact cohort of clients that pay. And that is the centerpiece of any given workplace. You can work back from there. Okay. Then the colleagues and how they do that work are the second most significant thing. And that's where already you're saying it's falling apart, because if you start to remove some of those key colleagues, maybe they're the teachers in the organization or they're the absolute rainmakers, et cetera. Now the center is starting to fall apart. My argument would be, if you can do the work, that exact work, that value for those clients from your organization from home, it's actually not a compromise of the workplace. But you have to answer that question. And when the work from home wave started, I don't think people had a ready answer for that question. Do we know exactly what the workplace is and what we're doing here?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, listen, can people socialize more in the office? Probably. But you know, how much more time are they actually working when there's other people in the office to chit chat with, right? You know, are they spending more time kibitzing than they are working?
Yeah.
Who knows, right? But these are the things that I would think of, right? I mean, certainly if you hire great people, they're going to want to work. They'll stop. They'll take 5 minutes. They'll take 10 minutes, chat with somebody, and then, you know, go back on their way. One of the arguments is that they think that their new grads, right, that some of these companies hire, will learn faster by overhearing the conversations of their mentors. And I guess that would be true if everybody was in a bullpen, maybe. But, you know, are they going to be in every place that their mentor is, right? And of course, people from different teams will run into each other, to my point. You know, they'll have the next, you know, breakthrough idea. And I'm not so sure that the only place that's going to happen is in the workplace. You know, I think overall are there going to be some people who are just going to be forced to go back to the office? And I would assert that those people will just be looking for a job while they're still there. And as soon as they find one, they'll be out the door.
In your experience with headhunting, you imagine bringing somebody in, let's say roughly at the top quarter, and then roughly at the bottom quarter within the org chart. I know that's, yep, that's kind of whatever, clunky language, but does your instinct suddenly change on the emphasis for, hey, working from home is considered a perk. I want you to think about it one way or another way. Is it a relatively senior and relatively junior difference in the way we think about it?
That's a really good question. I think that if it's a perk, it's a perk. I mean, and that's really what it is. It's a perk, right? Mm-hmm. So I've known people and I've read about people who would prefer to be in the office than at home. Not everybody's productive at home, or not everybody's as productive at home as they are in the office. For someone like that, work from home is not a perk.
Yeah.
Right? They don't need it. They don't want it. Perks depend. And I have said this ad nauseum, that what is a perk for one is not a perk for another. Mm-hmm. But the bigger issue is this bait and switch, right? So if I were still in the search business, let me go back to, you know, years ago when, you know, I'll never forget having a company hire someone, a sales rep, an individual contributor. You know, here's the offer. Here's your territory. Here's what you're going to be doing. And then they start at work and all of a sudden it's a different territory, or it's not the accounts that they discussed. Now, in the nearly 30 years I did that, I mean, that happened less than a handful of times, right? But it does happen. And what's the person to do? It took the job. I guess maybe you should be looking for a new job, or give this a try and see what happens. But it's really, I think, Kevin, it boils down to creating a proper expectation.
Yeah, that's quite an elegant answer, because the expectations, I think it answers both things. It's the same at both levels, that senior and junior level, not because it's literally identical what happens, but because in both cases, you're setting these expectations, right, and keeping a promise. What's your sense about how long a runway you need before it's a bait and switch? So I'll set that question up a little bit. I live in Singapore right now. Singapore is, I'll say, notorious, because there's a downside to being perfectly governed, which this country nearly is. It's a close example. They give long, long runway. They're like, we're going to be raising the GST, you know, 5 years from now by a point. And so everybody gets a lot of time to adjust, and they sort of have a 1 year marker, and they remind businesses, hey, if you need to charge GST, you know, make an adjustment. And then they have a 2 year marker and they remind consumers that they're going to have to pay. And lo and behold, there isn't exactly, you know, a peanut gallery of irate commentary, because what would you say? Like, who's the journalist going to come out and grind an axe? Oh no, they said 5 years from now, they're going to make a change. They have the benefit of continuity to be able to do something like that. But what an interesting example from a parallel field, where it's like, no trouble on something people classically hate, raise a tax by a percent, right? But there you go. Okay, that's 5 years. What would be a fair runway that doesn't count as bait and switch?
Yeah, that's a really hard question to answer. I think that in 2022, when things, you know, seem to go back to normal, companies should have said, and by January of 2025, which would give people over 2 years at that point, nearly three, by January 2025 or by June 2024, whatever that time is, or even if it's a year from now, we will be back to return to office. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, if you give people a year, anybody who doesn't buy into that strategy should be able to, anybody decent is going to be able to find a job within a year.
Yes.
And they'll self-select out. Right.
That was
to be a little too short, but if you really want to give at least a decent runway to your people, give them a year's notice. I mean, the more the better, but I mean, a year I think is reasonable.
Yeah, that to me would be maybe one way of getting roughly within the measurement for how long is not a bait and switch. It's long enough that it isn't massively disruptive to personal life and professional life. And there is some kind of organic length of time that you were just roughly citing, which is how long it takes to go find work without feeling like you pulled the fire alarm.
Right. Exactly. You know, and I do want to point out, while we're talking about things that are going to get people to quit, you know, these big companies now changing their performance reviews. You know, Rob and I had talked about this, but I'll tell you what, man, companies are just doubling down on this kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Most recently, Amazon overhauled its comp model, and it's rewarding long-running top performers with larger payouts. I have no problem with that. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the best salespeople make the most money, right? So if they perform, You know, they can hit 200% of their quota, 250. And, you know, anybody who's put in a good comp plan, you know, the minute they hit 100%, they're going to start escalating in percentages, right? Mm-hmm. So that's not the issue. The issue, I think, here is, are they using this trend of performance reviews and compensation to better incent your high performers? Again, I don't have any problems with high performers being incented. They don't want to lose them. You got to find out what motivates them. Mm-hmm. And then eliminate their underperformers and their drag, right? You know, that's what Amazon is up to. You know, Meta is now up to some very interesting thing. You know, they've now just told their managers to put more employees in its below expectations tier, which is the lowest level of performance.
Yeah.
For this year's mid-year performance reviews. And this was based on a memo that was shared with Business Insider, you know, and they said for teams of 150 or more, Meta wants managers to put 15 to 20% in the bottom bucket compared with 12 to 15 last year. Mm-hmm. So in both of these examples, both Meta and Amazon, and you can be sure other companies, I mean, Microsoft's talking about how it's doing performance reviews. You know, you really have to look at, is this really just the same thing as return to office to get people to quit?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they don't have to pay people quit. They don't have to pay severance. They don't have to pay insurance, whatever that might be.
I propose to you that there is a very old, let's call it a demon. Let's call it like a sin, right? An old demon that hangs around corporate Inc., just the world of corporations. And it's cowardice. It's cowardice by folks who have to make difficult, grainy, in-person, face-to-face decisions about how you talk to the people who do the work your company has to do, your organization has to get done. And I've seen this again and again at a lower level. I haven't actually worked with, other than as clients, these big organizations that seem to dictate where, you know, these trends that you just cited, Meta and Amazon. Let's put another 20 in there. But unfortunately, there's millions of companies and 20 seem to dominate the headline. Okay. They want to manage by formula. So they want to sit in a boardroom and come up with something that almost certainly is on Excel or a similar formula, maybe an HR software, and then go and announce it. You can see this in the topic we were just talking about. You can see it here. You can see it in other decisions. And then, of course, the second sin maybe is rolling that out at speed. It's like, we in our wisdom got together and typed some Excel formulas. And now we are letting you know that this is how it's going to go. I know that you were a perfectly fine performer at the bottom tier, but perfectly fine 2 weeks ago. It's just that you aren't anymore.
Yeah.
What's changed? What's changed is the Excel formula. And it's cowardice. You know, that's a strong word. That's an old school word. But it's cowardice because it's not willing to, it's giving up the willingness to say, you know, this is going to take time. We're going to have to grind it out. We're going to have to really differentiate what was so different about 2 weeks ago and now. And what is it that we want, where we have to pull the culture higher to a high performing culture? That's gritty and tough. And it's very easy to say, well, we changed the percentage from 12 to between 15 and 20. So it's shallow thinking. And I think underneath the shallow thinking, the reason they let themselves away with that is cowardice. It's tough to face it down.
Well, I think you're right. But I think another component is, you know, these are publicly traded companies we're talking about here. And again, I've talked about this ad nauseum too. Publicly traded companies do basically what Wall Street tells them to do, you know, tells them, I put that in quotes, right? So, you know, they get punished if their, you know, numbers don't look good, mm-hmm. and they get rewarded if their numbers look better. Right. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, I think that's all the, you know, underneath is really about the same issue. You know, I'll never forget, this is so many years ago. I mean, this is probably 25 years or more ago. I've been here in Colorado for 22 years. So I was still in New Jersey. I had a candidate I was talking to about a situation I was working on. And he said, I'm getting an offer from Oracle. I'll just say who it is. Getting an offer from Oracle. So, yeah, I'm not going to look at anything else. And I said, do you have the offer in writing? Do you have it in your hands? Mm-hmm. He said, no. I said, if you don't have it in your hands, it's not an offer. Okay. A verbal offer. It's not really an offer. I mean, it's a verbal offer. Nobody can hold you to it. You know, try suing Oracle because they made you a verbal offer and then changed the mind. Right. And I am, as Dave Barry would say, and I am not making this up, less than 24 hours later, he called me back and he says, oh my God, you were right. He goes, I decided not to, for whatever. I don't remember the reason now, of course, but I'm not getting an offer.
Brutal.
Right. And, you know, it is, I mean, there's, who knows what the reason was for it, but I have said, and I've had people say to me, well, you know, I want to work for a publicly traded company because it's more secure. I thought, are you crazy? That's so not the case. Mm-hmm. Then if you had trouble with startups, you went to the wrong startup. You didn't do your due diligence. You didn't look at what the management team was. You know, do they have any experience? What is their track record? Is it just a couple of, you know, 22-year-old tech bros, which doesn't mean their company won't succeed, but they have a greater probability that it won't succeed, right? And there are just so many things you have to look at. And it's never really, I've never understood that, you know, that whole, well, it's a big public trading company, so it's going to be much more secure for me. Mm-hmm. No, you just went to the wrong startup.
So let me see if I can connect some missing piece for myself. You've got the vagaries of the marketplace, hedge funds and long only asset managers and individual punters. And they're all the shareholders of Meta. Right.
Yeah.
And they can apply pressure, especially on those quarterly earnings meetings. And, you know, they turn the screw on the CFO and the investment. So the company's getting this pressure. You and I are not Pollyannas. We're not trying to cheerlead, you know, the softest, gentlest, kindest ways you could possibly be correct to people. It's awesome if the things that we're advocating for are soft and gentle and kind. That's awesome. But we're not advocating them for that reason. We think they're effective.
Yeah.
So what's the disconnect between the pressure from the marketplace and, say, the things that we're advocating for? Why don't they both arrive at the same place where you say something like, hey, we've got to give our people some runway so we don't lose the champions. Hey, we can't manage by Excel formula. Where do you think it breaks?
You know what? I don't even think I have an answer to that question. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not, you know, I don't have the luxury of being a fly on the wall inside these companies and how they're making these decisions. I mean, I am just, you know, what do I know? I mean, I'm just speculating on 32 years of experience working primarily in tech, right? And these are all primarily tech firms that we're hearing about that are doing things like this. And I really just don't know. All I would do is invite our listeners to let us know what they think about that. I think it's a great question. I mean, do you have an answer? Can you speculate?
No, I was so it would be awesome if I had just baited the question so I could give my brilliant answer, but I'm in the same bucket as you, Carol. So I'd like to hear sort of the collected wisdom from the listenership. There's something to do there, I think, with immediate term demand versus long term successful strategy. So that you might see in, you know, battle in sports and other places too, where you need to satisfy something that would be ideal right now for something that will be better later. And maybe the marketplace is just asking, hey, I don't care what's better later. We'll figure that out 2 years from now. Today, I want, you know, an extra percent on the top.
With that, please, listeners, let us know what you think. Who's got the answer to this question? Kevin, welcome to the show. Look forward to many fun episodes moving forward.
Thank you, Carol. Me too.
Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace After Hours. I'm your host, Carol Schultz.
And I'm your co-host, Kevin Legg. Don't forget to click follow to hear more. And please leave us an honest review and rating so we can continue to improve and bring you more great stories.
Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.